Welcome to a special 4th of July edition of Western Kentucky Live. I'm Stephen Rickard. Today we bring you a recorded conversation I had the opportunity to have with Dave Sheffett. If you watch Kentucky Education Television, then you've seen Dave Sheffett plenty of times. He's the host of the very popular television series Kentucky Life. Dave has been the host of the show for 11 seasons, starting back in 1999. He's made numerous visits to Hopkins County and the Madisonville area, as well as the other 119 counties in the Commonwealth. As you will hear over the next hour, as nice of a man that Dave Sheffett appears to be on the television show, he is just as nice as we sit down with a chat over the telephone to talk about his show, other past endeavors, and lots of behind-the-scenes talk about the show Kentucky Life. Well, let's get started with the Dave Sheffett's personal Kentucky life. Now, I grew up in a town called Greenville, and you grew up in a town with a similar name.
Greensburg. it's down in the south central part of the state, Stephen, and I guess it's about 100 miles south of Louisville. You're getting into the cave region down that way. And so I grew up crawling around in holes and stuff, looking for all of us did, in fact, looking for the next big link to Mammoth Cave.
That's right. You're right there close to where Mammoth Cave was. Now, speaking of all the crawling, let's go ahead and get this out of the way first. At the age of six, you got the nickname Mudcat, which is still stuck with you to this day in your area around Greensburg and Greene County. So let everybody know who may not have heard about this, how you got the nickname Mudcat.
Well, a friend of my father's noticed that as a little toddler, I was muddy all the time. I'm a treasure hunter. I have been all my life. I like to get out and explore, and we had some woods behind my house, and I just stayed dirty all the time, and I had to have baths a lot more frequently than other kids. And so this local fella started calling me Mudcat. There was a pro baseball player in the old days called Mudcat Grant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard of him or not, but that's how I got the name, and it stuck hard, and even to the point where relatives call me Mudcat back home.
Now, so I guess that really shows just how much of an outdoorsy person you were growing up there in Greene County, and I guess all your life you've kind of have grown up in the outdoors.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I've done a little of everything out there.
Here's a little bit of Kentucky geographic trivia for you. Now, you're from Greensburg, and we're doing this on the other side in Madisonville, and both towns are connected by which highway? You know right off the top?
You put me on the spot there. Because I go down Western Kentucky Parkway.
Right.
Every chance I get.
Actually, it's
68.
Actually, 70. Highway 70 runs through Greensburg.
6870.
And and runs through Madisonville both. So I thought that was kind of unique to link both your hometown and everybody's hometown here with Highway 70 runs right down to your neck of the woods.
Right, right. And I realize that now. And by the way, Madisonville's a great town.
Well, thank you.
I have stopped there quite often over the years. And have spent more than a few nights in Madisonville doing Kentucky Life pieces here and there.
Yeah, and you started, what was the name of your high school? Was it Greene County?
Greene County High School, yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. And
I went to college at Murray State.
Yeah, and in 1982, you graduated with a degree in communications. After that, you did a couple of stints on TV at a couple of different places. One was in Kentucky, I think, your first job?
Oh, it was a little bitty TV station. That's where I started right out of college, and a little tiny little TV station in Campbellsville, Kentucky, just where I got my start.
Mm-hmm.
And I never intended to be in front of the camera. Through college, I studied production mainly, and somebody got sick one day, and they threw me in front of the camera, and I kind of been there ever since.
And isn't that the way all jobs like that start?
It's accidental, yeah.
Yep. Then came in 1989, you had a chance to work for the first time at Kentucky Educational Television to host a show that's now hosted by Tim Farmer, and we have the radio version right now on Sunday nights on WFMW. So how did you land the role of host of Kentucky Afield?
Well, TV station I started out, I was in the news end of it as a videographer, cameraman, whatever you want to call it. And I eventually wound up at Channel 18 in Lexington, Kentucky. And I would always go over to, whenever I could, to promote fish and wildlife, do a story on them, a little feature news story on some the good things that they do. And about that time, the host at the time retired or moved back to the Carolinas, and they offered me the job, and I did that show for about 6.5, 7 years, and had a ball. It was a crash course in fish and wildlife management and hunting and fishing and all those good things.
So a lot of your outdoors from your youth really started to pay off for that role.
Right, but I never was very good at hunting, and you know, never was a great sportsman by any means. You know, pretty novice. You know, I grew up out in the middle of nowhere and was around farming culture all my life, and you know, everybody fished and hunted too. But I never was a great one. I get my line tangled up as bad as anybody. Believe me.
So you had that job from 89 to 95. Do you remember kind of any way too funny or way too dramatic stories that you can share during that run?
Yes, I got attacked by a buck deer.
Oh, my.
That aired all over the country. You know, I can't remember the programs at the time, but I have been recognized around the country, you know, from Florida to California, from being attacked by a deer on TV. And what happened was we were doing a segment on rut and, you know, deer shedding their antlers, the bucks, and the velvet that grows on the antlers and all that. And myself and a wildlife biologist and a camera guy were in an enclosed area where, you know, the Fish and Wildlife Game Farm in Frankfort is kind of a zoo as well. So they had some deer in an enclosed area, which enabled us to get up close and personal. We were doing the story, camera was rolling, and all of a sudden that buck deer, a 9-point buck deer, lowered his head and charged right at me.
Oh, my.
I kind of flew up over his antlers and, you know, took the hit and hung on for dear life to his antlers. And the wildlife biologist, the late Lauren Schaaf, who was director of wildlife at that time, he tried to rescue him by flipping getting the deer's feet and trying to flip him like a, you know, a cow or something. And he couldn't do any good. And then a fellow by the name of Johnny Widener, who worked there, came in to try to rescue us. And the deer left me and rammed him against the fence and put a hole in his leg. And then two other guys managed to come from outside the fence and tie the deer's antlers onto the fence while Johnny crawled out from under the deer with a hole in his leg and had to be taken to the hospital. That deer meant to kill somebody.
That is too bizarre.
Yes. In the wild, for the most part, they'll run as fast as they can. But, you know, that was a captive deer, and who knows what that does to their attitude. I'm sure he'd lost his fear of people, and he was cantankerous, you know, and just decided he was going to kill somebody.
Either that or he was trying to ensure he was going to get camera time for the shoot.
Yeah, that's right. And Fish and Wildlife would still have that somewhere in their archives.
Yeah. How different, if any, is the show then to what we have now with Tim?
I think it's, you know, their message is pretty much the same. They reach out to both the what they call the consumptive and non-consumptive users of our natural resources, and you know, try to let everybody know how much sportsmen contribute to the to wildlife management across the state, whether it be deer or black bears or whatever, you know, all species, elk, you name it.
Mm-hmm. So, turkeys. Oh, yeah. You don't have to say anything about turkeys here in this part of Kentucky. I think you have to, you know, as you drive down a country road, it was look out for the deer, and now it's look out for the turkey.
Isn't that the truth? Out my road, I live out in the middle of nowhere, and I have seen them fly past my windshield, kind of look like they're getting ready to run into a tree on the other side of the road, but they're kind of clumsy at times. But yeah, I've had the same thing happen over and over.
That is Kentucky. That is Kentucky life.
That's right.
Okay, after your run there, you went to produce your own television series, and what was that?
Well, I had a show. I'd always dreamed of having my own television series, and so I pursued that, and I wound up with a show on the Outdoors Channel and a few broadcast stations around the country. Called Outdoors with Dave Shuffit, and it was an outdoor adventure series that included all things from recreational gold mining in California to dog sledding in Wyoming to horseback riding to fishing in Florida. It just had a little of everything in it. And I did the show for the three seasons, but I had one little tiny daughter and a little boy coming on, and it was not conducive for family life. I did the show for three seasons, and I was fortunate to get to see America, paid for by my sponsors, and not many people can say that. I didn't make a lot of money, but I got to see the country.
Sure.
But I kept thinking of those kids. I just couldn't keep going with that kind of lifestyle and be a good father,
Right.
So, when Byron Crawford retired from Kentucky Life, KET contacted me and offered me the job. I put the national show in reruns and came back home.
Mm-hmm.
Lickety split.
Right. So he did. He hosted the shows year 1 through 5, and you got the start of season 6. And
yes.
So that's how that all came about. As Byron was going to call it quits, then well, they gave you a call, or you found out about it, or.
Yeah, they gave me a call and asked me to come over and talk to them about that position, and I certainly did. And that was about 12 years ago.
That is Dave Shuffit, host of Kentucky Life on KET. Kentucky Life airs Saturdays at 7 p.m. and Sundays at 3 p.m. local time on KET, and Sundays at 6:30 p.m. on KET2, as well as on the KET Kentucky channel. You can also catch past episodes airing on the various KET network channels throughout the week. When we come back on this special edition of Western Kentucky Live, we pick up with the start of Dave's life on Kentucky Life and what it takes to produce this show that is all about the common. Wealth. That and more when we return on Western Kentucky Live on 7:30 a.m. WFMW. Welcome back to Western Kentucky Live and our recorded conversation with Dave Shuffit, host of KET's Kentucky Life, which recently concluded their 16th season. So from the seasons you've been with Kentucky Life, it looks like you host 20 to 30 shows a year. So just in a nutshell, take us through a year with the show, and I'm sure our listeners may just not have an idea just how much work it takes to produce one show, much less 30.
There's three of us who are producers for the show. I'm the only host, but I'm also one of the producers out of three full-time producers for the show, and then we have a lot of in-house help, too, from other people around the building here at KET who contribute to the show. We couldn't do it without them. It is more work than people realize. The length of time I'm gone is manageable now. It's not like doing a national production like I was telling you about just a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
But you are on the road quite a bit. I guess I'm gone an average of a couple of days a week year round. Whether it be Paducah or Madisonville or Murray or especially Western Kentucky does require an overnighter,
mm-hmm.
as we call it. And a far eastern part of the state requires the same thing. It's up on Black Mountain or Pine Mountain and those areas. So we have a crew with us, the producers, the three of us that are full-time producers, usually have a crew, a videographer, audio person, and we go out every week, literally, and get anything under the sun that has to do with Kentucky life. Whether it be art, history, nature, recreation, high adventure, and here lately they've got me doing what's called Dave Does It, where it's sort of our version of the dirtiest jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That show was so popular, we had to steal that a little bit, put it on Kentucky Life. So I've been I've done everything from mixing concrete to working in a scrap yard in Owensboro to, it's gotten so many now I'm losing track of all of them.
Yeah, I know.
I've been commercial fishing on the Mississippi River down in Hickman, and that was the nastiest job I ever got into. But
I'm sure ballroom dancing was at the height of your Dave Does It, right?
Yeah, but that's right, and it includes that kind of thing as well, ballroom dancing, which I was very clumsy at, by the way.
Well, I'll get to probably one of your better ones. One I saw a few weeks ago was the Dave Does It, where you participated with the Senior Men's Baseball League.
Let me see
if I got that right. You had a base hit, got an RBI, I think. You made it to third, almost scored, and you were a darn good glove at first base. Would you say that was probably the most fun of the Dave Does Its for you personally?
It was. That was it, because I played a couple of two or three games of Little League when I was a kid, and have not done anything but throw some ball casually in a backyard over the years here and there. And I got out there that day, and I don't know who was smiling on me, but I realized, I probably should have taken up baseball and stuck with it, because I think I could have been a pretty good player.
If anybody hasn't seen it, that's one that people really get a kick out of.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just surprised myself and everybody else, usually I'm quite the novice at just about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Especially fishing. I'm going to fish for squirrels quite often,
Right.
Out on a river or lake or something. But I did okay on the baseball field that day.
If I recall right, as we talk about the Dave Does It segment, so you make a pretty fine broom, too.
Oh, now you know better than that, Steven. That poor guy, he was feeling so sorry for me by the end of the day. He couldn't say it on camera, but.
Oh, did he?
Oh, it's the ugliest broom you ever saw in your life.
I didn't. Maybe it was the camera angle that made it look a little bit better than what you're saying it turned out to be.
No, I've got the broom at home, and every time I see it every morning, I'm reminded how ugly that broom is. That was the Henson Broom Shop down there in Western Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
You guys have probably heard of him, but he tried his best to show me how he does it, and I didn't do it very well. That's why I keep it out. It's quite the conversation piece, what in the world is that? Surely somebody didn't sell that in a store somewhere.
So it's easy to say you've been all across the Commonwealth and back several times. So I'll ask you the question this way. Other than Greene County, what has made Dave Sheffett's jaw drop as far as beautiful scenery, something from the art, something you've traveled to and say, oh my goodness, that's why we're doing the show?
Well, I would have to say, it's those wetlands down there in the far west for me. I know we got some pretty mountains in the east, and we got beautiful bluegrass horse farms, and my cave country where I'm from with the cattle farms and tobacco farms down there, so pretty. But those wetlands in the far west are extraordinary. I mean, with the cypress and tupelo swamps and the egrets flying around and bald eagles and Canada geese in the winter. Those are extraordinary places, and it looks like you're in Louisiana, not Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing to me. It's like you're in an enchanted world down there in those swamps.
Right,
and
right.
They're so important too for wildlife. So I would say Ballard Wildlife Management Area, Reelfoot Lake, which sticks up into Kentucky, Swan Lake. Those areas just still take my breath away when I see them.
Mm. Now, you've spoken to a lot of celebrities, legends, people of interest. Any of those stick out more than the others during the past 11, 12 seasons?
Oh, let's see.
I know for the country music side, you did a lot of work on Loretta Lynn in her hometown.
Right, right. And that's to see where she got her start in life and what she became is, that's quite the story, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that little kind of like a cabin on the side of a mountain over in Johnson County.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've interviewed a few celebrities along the way, and everybody's been very nice so far. I'm a big believer in, you know, the people are the reason you have a job out there. And when I talk to people on the street, I am very, you know, I talk to them like it's the first person that ever recognized me from the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'll sign things for them because I really do appreciate making a living because of them, you know?
Right, and that's exactly what you're doing.
And I guess my point is there's a lot of, especially these big national celebrities that don't seem to appreciate that like they should.
Right.
And, you know, they make huge amounts of money and forget who the reason they make that money, you know?
Right. So I guess the shortest question I can think of during this whole interview, is there any place in the state yet that you have not been?
Not really. There may be some.
I knew that would be a short
road
answer.
a few little side road maybe that I haven't been down, but I've been in every county up and down one side of the county to the other.
And I guess a follow-up to that would be, has all 120 Kentucky counties been featured on an episode of Kentucky Life somewhere down the road?
Yes, they have. In fact, we, you know, our headquarters, KET's headquarters, is Lexington, Kentucky, but we do no more stories in Lexington than we do in Paducah or Pikeville or everywhere in between. And we keep a track to make sure it's evenly distributed out there.
Well,
that's what KET's about. It's for the whole state, not just where we're located here.
Let's, since we're talking about the different areas, let's talk local for a second. You film many segments in Western Kentucky, and as we've been talking about, and you have been in Hopkins County as well as other neighboring counties. And here, I guess your first season, you did a couple things at Trover Medical Center and Dawson Springs about the health resort and the baseball history with Tradewater Pirates. And
yeah.
Any other things like that you remember just right off the top of your head from being in Hopkins County, Madisonville area?
Well, we've been there more than that. I mean, we've done some road shows through Madisonville, that all through down there, where we taken a road. These are specials that they air during our telephone.
Yeah,
every year.
You've been down Highway 62, which takes you through Muhlenberg
yeah.
County. Highway 60 takes you through Davis County. Highway 68. That takes you through, I guess, the more southern part.
Right, right. And but with, you know, in Madisonville, we've done more stories than you've mentioned. And of course, they're escaping me right now. That's the problem. Is a, you know, that after hundreds of episodes, they kind of run together.
I was getting ready to say, if do you ever tune in and just. A random day will be having one of your old episodes during the weekdays, and you say, I don't remember doing that.
Well, I do remember, you know, if it's from 10 or 11 years ago, I'll remember it when I see it rerun
right.
very clearly, but not until then.
Yeah.
I hate to admit that.
Yeah. Well,
but,
I mean,
it's... it's just so many episodes that your mind is kind of gets overwhelmed.
Right, and you've got one airing, and you produced that several weeks ago or months ago, and you're already working on three more that's coming up months down the road.
Well, just like you do at the radio station, you know?
Right.
Same thing.
Yeah, if we...
You got to be thinking way ahead.
Exactly right. Elsewhere, you visited interesting place like Bill Monroe's hometown of Rosine. That was in your first season.
Yeah.
McLean County River Towns, the Beaver Dam Cafe, just two or three years ago. And recently, you did a segment about the Trail of Tears in Hopkinsville. You've been through Davis County several times. So when you're talking about being all across this area, you really have been all across this area.
Many more than you've mentioned there.
Right.
Like I said, we try very hard to take care of Western Kentucky and highlight the people and places there just like anywhere else in the state.
Right.
It just causes me to have to stay in a hotel down there. So I have to do an overnighter, like I said.
Well, that's good for our economy over here. So
that's right.
all those people making those pledges at KET, you know, some of the money's coming back in back home.
Right. Yeah, every time we're in Western Kentucky.
That's right. Now, here's a good one for you. You've dined
at many an eatery in Kentucky. More importantly, this you did a piece about Farrell's restaurant in Hopkinsville. And I think we covered this.
Great.
Yeah, I think we covered this when I talked to you a few weeks ago. I'm sure the folks here in Madisonville might be a little upset that you went to the Hopkinsville Farrells instead of the Madisonville Farrells. What do you have to say about that, Dave Shuffett?
Well, are they owned by the same people?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the one in Katy's, too.
That's what I thought. Yeah. In fact, the owner mentioned that, if I remember correctly, on the interview, that there were two others. Oh, I apologize to the people of Madisonville. I was the wrong
barrel. And if we were doing this, and if we were at a Hopkinsville radio station, it was vice versa, then they would probably give you grief because they would always think that the burgers are better in their Farrells than their hometown.
Absolutely. But they were sure good there where I ate them.
We love our Farrell burgers. Now, a couple of seasons ago, and we talked about this a little bit, the Dave Does It, and something that people might not realize is the first Dave Does It segment, which was, I think, season 15, about four episodes in, you did your first Dave Does It in Davis County. That was your first Dave Does It.
That was a scrap yard.
And you got to play with some big pieces of machinery and a lot of metal.
Dahl and Grozinger, I always struggle to say that, scrap in Owensboro, goes way back. That's a very old family-run business, and just fine people, I am telling you. They are great folks. And they took a real chance and let me get in those big cranes and crush things. And, of course, somebody was right there beside me, you know, as they should be, for everybody's safety. But I got to crush cars and do all kinds of neat things that, you know, us boys, we never really completely grow up. And I was just like a little kid in the candy store, let me tell you.
Right, and we've talked about the brooms and the baseball team. And speaking of baseball, if I remember correctly, you got to make a bat in Louisville?
I did, yes. My late father, I was very close to him, and he had a contract with the St. Louis Cardinals in 1941, right as the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, and he volunteered, and he in the service he lost an eye, lost vision in an eye from a wounded in action in the Battle of the Bulge, and lost his baseball career. But he, you know, didn't let it get him down. The scouts came back after him after the war, but he just, the greatness that he had before the war just wasn't there anymore, you know, and mm-hmm. He was a catcher. And, but he didn't, you know, he didn't give up. He just kept on going and pursued other things and became a community leader in Greensburg and just a fantastic dad, I'm telling you. And they made a bat in honor of him there at the Louisville Slugger. I will never forget that.
You actually didn't make the bat. I couldn't remember that segment right off the top of my head.
I made part of the bat, and, of course, they burned the name in. And I got to help make the bat, I should put it that way. But,
so you did a much better job on the bat than you did the broom. Is that right?
Oh, yes. Yes. I did. That broom was tough.
You can tell Dave has a lot of fun making Kentucky Life and bringing it to the viewers on KET each season. Dave Shuffett is our guest on this special edition of Western Kentucky Live. After CBS Radio News, we continue more of our conversation with Dave and discussions about his 11 seasons of production, including many of the specials you have loved over the years. That and more on Western Kentucky Live on America's Music Radio, 730 WFMW, Madisonville, Kentucky. I'm Stephen Rickard, and I welcome you back to this special edition of Western Kentucky Live on this 4th of July. As you travel across the state during this holiday, we are bringing you a recorded interview with someone who has logged a few more miles than you over the past 11 years. Dave Shuffett hosts Kentucky Life on the KET family of networks. You can catch his shows Saturdays at 7 p.m. and Sundays at 3:30 p.m. on KET, Sundays at 6:30 p.m. on KET2, and at various times on KET Kentucky. Here now is more of our interview with Dave Shuffett.
Yeah, so we've talked about some of your journeys, the Highway 62 and Highway 60 and Highway 68. How long do those take to make? You spend a little bit longer time naturally having to do those.
Right. Those are two-hour specials, and to get those things done, we haven't done one in a little bit, in a couple, 3 years, but you have to, we're on the road 5 days a week for about a month, and then we come home on the weekends and then go back out where we left off. And that, you know, helps us keep a family life going during that month-long period of going on a road across the state. And we've done a lot of roads over the years.
Yep.
And that requires a much larger crew of people. There's usually 7 or 8 folks that are on those treks.
Yeah.
It looks like I'm traveling down the road by myself and just having a leisurely time. And and there's a crew, quite the crew of folks behind me all across. I'll give you a little secret too. It looks like you breeze in a little town and you're there for a couple hours, and then you're on your way again to the next town down the road. But usually it takes us a couple of days to get 5 or 6 minutes in one little town along those roads. And they would give me 2 shirts, identical shirts, and to wear on the, so when we'd work all day and the other shirt got kind of nasty, I could put on another one the next day because we weren't done yet and look like I never, had the same shirt on. Continuity factor there.
Right.
Give you a little secret on how that.
Well, that's something that people might not think about is, you just don't go and film. You just don't pick up a camera and go film something. There's a whole lot of preparation that goes in before you actually get there.
Yeah, and then when you're there, it just takes a lot. It takes a lot to produce 5-6 minutes of high quality stuff in one particular area.
Well, say if you come into like Madisonville and this is your first time. You don't know about the people and the places and the things and unless you get it off of Google or Wikipedia or something, and you start from there, and you actually have to go talk to the mayors and judges and chambers of commerce to find out what would make for an interesting couple of minutes.
Oh, exactly. A lot of preparation. And yes, there's a lot of research. In fact, one person does all the research prior to even taking going on the road show, gets a lot of that knocked out in many weeks before we ever got on the road.
Now, another special you did, this was a couple of years ago, it was a Father's Day special, and it actually aired a few weeks back on this Father's Day, and it was, I guess you call it one of the real heart tuggers through the course of your series, and you really told a great story about your father, and that was a really great show.
Well, thank you very much. I just got nominated for an Emmy on that one.
Oh, great.
I never seemed to win an Emmy, but it's kind of nice to get nominated. Yes, that was several sons in that show. And I, as host, I happened to be one of the sons who was told my story as well. But this was based on a book which took off nationally called Father Loss, How Sons of All Ages Come to Terms with the Deaths of Their Dads. So lots of stuff had been done on moms and daughters, but nothing before that book had been done on how sons are affected by loss of their dads. And in the documentary, it doesn't matter what age, I was 49 when I lost my dad, and it was like being 12, But one son described it, and, he was a 55-year-old son or something like that. And he described it like this: if you're looking out a picture window, and all your life you've had a snow-capped peak you're looking at, a big mountain, and all of a sudden one day you look out that window and that mountain is gone. And that's what it feels like for a lot of guys out there. And they don't know how to grieve. I didn't either. They just kind of hold it in. And, us guys aren't supposed to show any emotion and be kind of hardcore. I'm the same way, and so it's really tough on the guys out there. We just don't know. That's what the book was for, to help men figure it all out. It was a successful show.
I'm sure you probably got a lot of comments after that first aired.
It aired nationally too, on a lot of PBS stations out there, and got a great response. It helped a lot of guys out.
Oh, good.
And we had one son that had a bad relationship with his dad, and they have it rough too because they after the dads are gone, of what might have been, what could have been.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of the other specials you've done over the past center around the Christmas theme. And I think you've done just one just about every season during your run. And those things are really put together good. I'm sure that takes a lot of time and a lot of work to really show the festive atmosphere of the holidays.
It does. And what we have to do on those, those are last-minute productions, boy, I'm telling you. We go out in November and hope somebody set up Christmas decorations as soon after Thanksgiving as possible, and we'll go do those things and air them, you know, just weeks later.
Right.
So those are quick turnarounds usually.
And I know you've, since you're an old Mammoth Cave boy, that you've really featured the choirs in the cave. That really comes off good too. Yeah.
That was fantastic. I mean, the acoustics in there with the group singers that we had, two or three groups under there, unbelievable. It just sounded like you could make a recording right there in Mammoth Cave. The acoustics were tremendous.
Right. And on the production side, you've recently switched to filming in HDTV. Now you really get to paint a more colorful picture of the Commonwealth, don't you?
Well, and you really show the wrinkles when they do a close-up of you, too.
I wasn't going to go there.
I'm telling you what now. That's the bad part about it, but the good part about it is, yes, everything is much more spectacular than it ever has been in the past. And we compare our footage today with what was the cameras that were the national standard just a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we would think that, oh, that's such a beautiful image. But you compare this HD stuff to it today, and it's like night and day. It's just amazing the difference. And especially your nature stuff. And, man, it's beautiful in HD.
And you make sure you shave real good each morning, right?
Yeah, and that doesn't even do enough good.
Now, season 16, finally you get your chance to go to the Kentucky Derby.
Uh-huh.
And it looks like you just had a ball there.
I really did. It was the first Derby, and for me, in the grandstands there, and to be, you know, we had full access, which is, you know, that's one of the benefits. We don't get rich in public television, but, you know, that's one of the benefits is to get to do stuff like that. We had full access to Churchill Downs on Derby Day, and I was just a few feet away from Diane Lane on Millionaire's Row, and I think we had a better view of the race than she did. We were looking right down on the race and had unobstructed views, and worth its weight in gold. I don't know what you have to pay for something like that, but I certainly couldn't afford it.
So with all that you've done, what would you say has been, you've driven ducks and you've done just about everything. What would you say has been probably the one most fun segment you've got to be a part of?
Well, the Derby is right up there. The baseball game is up there. Murphy's Pond was, you know, one of the most memorable because of all the cottonmouth snakes in there, water moccasins, whatever you call them.
Right.
Highly venomous. And I have never seen a place so chock full of venomous snakes as Murphy's Pond. That is unbelievable. And we were in there with a PhD from Murray State who helps manage Murphy's Pond, and we were looking around, and it looked like a log was moving one time, and the bushes had snakes crawling in them, and they were swimming on the water. The reason the log looked like it was moving is because it had a wad of snakes on it. So that was one of the most memorable. And I asked the doctor, I said, what happens if I was to tip this canoe over and fall in the water with all these water moccasins? He said, well, it'd be nice to have your will done. Because I guess if you get bit multiple, I mean, I don't think one bite will kill you, but
right,
multiple times it might.
I don't remember that episode, and I don't know if I'm going to be watching that one or not.
That was one that stands out in my head. Murphy's Pond. It's not really a pond. It's a big wetland complex, mm-hmm. and it has the highest population of cottonmouths in the United States. And that's a southern species. That mm-hmm. snake just lives in the south. So why is it that there's so many of them all the way in the northernmost region, like Murphy's Pond, in western Kentucky? Well, they don't have any predation there. There's no gators or anything like that to keep them under control. They're mm-hmm. the top predator. And they also have live babies, and they were floating around too, and they're hard to see, and they have just as much venom as mama. And,
wow.
You know, of course, unpredictable too. That was one to remember.
And on that disturbing note, that might be a cue for us to take a quick break. You're listening to a special Western Kentucky Live in our recorded conversation with Dave Shuffit, host of KET's Kentucky Life, getting ready to start a 17th season this fall. If you want to see episodes of Kentucky Life, just log on to their website at www.ket.org/Kentucky Life. You can view almost all of Dave's adventures throughout the state, including all the stops right here in Western Kentucky. We'll return in just a moment, and we'll talk about Dave's four-legged co-host over the seasons and how his current sidekick, Toby, managed to fall in his lap. It's a unique story, and you'll hear about it in just a minute on Western Kentucky Live on 730 WFMW. We return now to our 4th of July special edition of Western Kentucky Live. You're listening to a recorded conversation I had recently with Dave Shuffit, host of Kentucky Life on KET. Here is more of that interview.
And I had Franklin County, but you say you call Anderson County now home.
Yeah, I lived in Franklin County, but I just moved across the line to Anderson, not far away.
Okay, okay. You've had co-stars with you over the past few years.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about the dog.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. You've got I guess let's just start with Sadie and work our way up to Charlie Bosco and then to Toby.
Well, Sadie I got her out of the animal shelter when she was about somewhere around 3 years old, and she was such a friendly little thing, kind of a border collie mix, and I trained her. I trained my own dogs and worked with her, and she became a fantastic traveling companion. And I bet we traveled literally thousands of miles together. She lived to be around 15 years old, and she had a wonderful life.
Mm-hmm.
Then before she passed on, I got Charlie, the young golden retriever, to help kind of make a transition there and keep her company as she got old, kind of take the pressure off her and gradually make that transition to him, and that's how he came into the picture. And I got him from a breeder. Then when Sadie passed on, I thought, well, I'm going to get another dog at some point to do the same thing all over again, make one transition to the other. And so now it's just Toby, the younger golden, with me now. Just got one.
And if I understand correctly, there was quite an odd little story about how Toby came into your life. Toby was an abandoned dog,
dumped on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Down in Mercer County, and this I had planned on getting another dog at some point, but I certainly wasn't ready to then. You're talking about those road shows. We were doing a public relations appearance at Shakertown in Mercer County to promote a upcoming roadshow special where we travel down the highway, you know, and this young couple was in line there waiting to talk to me, and when they got to me, they said, you know, we've noticed you have dogs on the show, and we've got one that we found across the road from our house in the bushes. He'd been there for 2 days without moving. He was, you know, crying and never left the bushes right on the side of the road. So they went and got him. They couldn't keep him for various reasons, so they were looking for a home for this pup about 8 months old. And, you know, when they were standing there, they said, can we go get him and show him to you? We just live 5 minutes from here. And I said, no, I'm not ready for this right now. I've got the one golden retriever, Charlie, and that'll do me for now, for a while. And they said, but it's just 5 minutes away. Can you just at least take a look? I said, all right, run, get him. And they went and got him, and I looked at him, and I said, all right, he found a new home.
Oh, me.
He turned out to be the best thing. He is so good on the show. You can point to where he needs to sit, and he'll go there and sit. And he just is very laid back and well-behaved. He's really taken the reins nicely.
That is Dave Shuffit, host of the television show Kentucky Life, seen each week on KET. We'll come right back and conclude our conversation with a look at the future of the show and what to expect. That comes your way in just a minute on this special edition of Western Kentucky Live, right here on 730 WFMW and online at WFMW.net. And now we get ready to wrap up our conversation with Dave Shuffit from KET's Kentucky Life on this edition of Western Kentucky Live on 730 WFMW.
So am I correct that all of season 16 has aired?
Yes. Yeah, we're doing 17 right now.
So is 17 started to air, or is it due to air soon?
No, 17 will pick up a little bit in the fall and then again in January and run through the spring, all new shows.
Okay. So we've got another year coming up.
We're out doing them now.
Anything you can tell us about some of the things we may be seeing on season 17?
I just did one yesterday over in right where I live in Anderson County on the Kentucky Gentleman Cigar Company. This guy has become successful. He went down to the Dominican Republic a few years ago, spent about 9 months learning to hand roll cigars, and I guess there's such an art to it that you have to have that long to really know how to do it right. He takes that skill back to Kentucky and a few years ago and starts hand rolling cigars that are from tobacco from all over the world, really, and some of it's better than the Cuban tobacco. And he rolls them up and puts them in beautiful boxes, and he started out selling just a handful a month, and now he's selling about 7,000 cigars a month. So that's fresh in my mind is the reason I'm telling you that.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Kentucky Gentleman Cigar Company.
Huh. Now, are there going to be any Our Town segments featured on some of the streets that we may have driven around here locally that you know of?
Brandon Wickey is—he's one of the producers on the show. He's lining those up. He'll come up with all those towns, and they'll be evenly distributed across the state. He's very good about that.
Okay, and what's Dave going to be doing this year? Are you going to be putting any more danger?
I worked on a dairy farm, and got manure on me, and did some cow milking.
Yep.
And reached up in there to see if one was pregnant. That was a real experience, let me tell you.
I think I may have turned it off of that. So while that was airing it right at that point in time.
Oh, that's already aired. That's right. I'm sorry. I was thinking, okay, that was the end of this season.
Yeah.
I get all mixed up.
So as I understand, just about after this communication is over, the day we're recording this, you're off on a little vacation to kind of re-energize and get ready for all of season 17 that you're all going to be putting together.
Right. I'll be gone a couple of weeks, and then I'll be back in full swing.
All right.
Sure will.
So when with all the shows you've hosted, including those that Byron did in the start, do you think there are still lots of stories to tell for even more wonderful seasons down the road?
Oh, yes. I tell you why. The people replenish themselves. I mean, there's always new people that grow up that are skilled or talented. We have so many talented people in Kentucky, whether it's musically, artistically, or craft makers, you name it. And so there's always a new crop of them. And then the places we revisit, because they've changed as well, over the years. People have forgotten that we were there 10 years ago or 12 years ago or whatever, or 15 years ago. So we'll go back to the same places and hit them again.
Mm-hmm.
And Brandon Wickey's the series producer on the show, and he is so good about one of his main jobs is to make sure we are evenly distributed out there, like I've been talking about. And he is really good about that kind of thing. So
And you're leading me into one of my last questions I have for you. With all the productions, and we've talked about this a little bit in the past hour, no one man can do the chore alone. And I'm sure you've got a cast of millions, or at least a good handful, that helps bring this wonderful show to the screen.
Oh, yes. Valerie Trimble, Brandon Wickie, who I just mentioned, a lot of people in the building, Tom Bickle, who produced the Dairy Farm piece. I can go on and on. Oh, it takes sometimes more than a handful of people.
Mm-hmm.
To get this thing done.
I noticed
there are just three of us that work on it all the time, but
right.
We've got to have the help of plenty of others.
I know there was Barbara Deeb, who used to be on Channel 13. People may have seen on TV in the Bowling Green, and
yes.
She's done a lot of work with KT. I've noticed her name a few times as producers. I think she did the Corvette Museum piece, the first thing
right.
I can remember.
Right. They take care of a lot of stuff for us that we have a partnership with them, and they get a lot of stuff out of the Bowling Green area down in there for us that we really appreciate.
So when it all comes down to the years that you've done this now, you say on the website you consider yourself a very blessed man, and I can imagine with all the stuff you've presented folks on television to be there live and be part of it, that's been a pretty special thing over the few years, hasn't it?
Oh, for 25 or 28 years now, I've just been really lucky. I've never made a lot of money. I mean, people have the misconception. Now, if I was on CBS or NBC or in Hollywood making movies, I'd be rich. To be able to travel all over the place and meet great people and see great places over and over again, that it's sort of you get paid to play, basically.
Right.
So, you know, if you can earn, eke out a living doing that, then you're doing good.
That sounds great. Well, I've been a fan of the show, and you've had a lot of fun things to watch over the course of years, and I certainly can't wait till season 17 gets underway to see what more you can provide from around the state.
Well, thank you, Stephen. I appreciate it, buddy. It was nice talking to you again.
We certainly thank Dave Shufford for spending a little time talking about his life and his show, Kentucky Life, seen Saturdays at 7 p.m. and Sundays at 3:30 p.m. on KET, as well as Sundays at 6:30 p.m. on KET2 and various times on KET Kentucky. Don't forget that plenty of information about Dave and many of his adventures can be found on their website at www.ket.org/Kentucky Life. And that wraps up this edition of this 4th of July special, Western Kentucky Live on 730 WFMW. If you missed any of this or would like to listen to it again, you can hear the show on our website at WFMW.net. We thank you for listening. Stand by. News is next.